This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 1 Overall Process Support Outreach Issue Call on the 28th of February, 2017 at 20 UTC. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you're only on the phone line, would you please let yourself be known now? Thank you. And as a reminder to all participants, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. I apologize, for audio purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, you may begin.
Great, thank you. This is Sarah Bakke for the record. So thank you all for joining us today. We're going to be getting into discussions on the application guidebook, as well as touching on some follow-ups on systems and communications. And is everyone seeing the agenda? As well as follow-up discussions on CC2 questions from yesterday from the working group call. We had some, items that we needed to address, and so we were going to get to those. If it looks like we're running short on time, depending on the length of our application guidebook discussion, we'll move the CC2 questions up to the slot after it to make sure we get to those today. And then, of course, any other business. Does anyone have anything in particular for any other business that they would like to discuss today or that you have in mind that you would like added to the agenda at this point? Seeing no hands, I will check to see if anyone has any updates to their statements of interest. Still seeing no hands. Okay, I think we are probably good to start our discussion. So with that, Krista, I'm going to pass it over to you to start the discussion on the application guidebook.
I think Emily was going to jump in and maybe give a little quick explanation of the subject and background. Am I correct in that, Emily?
Hi, Chris. So this is Steve. Almost. It's actually going to be Steve instead.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah. I'm in a better position to be able to present than Emily. She's actually in an airport, and it's nice and noisy there. So this is Steve from staff. And so you are probably all familiar with this from other work tracks where staff is providing an introduction to the subject to level set and provide a little background and make sure everyone's able to understand the subject to be able to discuss it. So what we'll be discussing right now is the applicant guidebook. This is primarily based on the text from the issue report, or the final issue report. So the applicant guidebook is effectively the implementation of the policy recommendations from the 2007 final report. It doesn't look exactly quite like other policy implementations where you see a consensus policy that results from, say, the IRTP or thick quiz or things like that, where it ends up published on a consensus policy page and you have effective dates and contractual obligations for contracted parties. So this was the vehicle for the implementation of the policy. You'll see this blurb from the AGB that we've used in a lot of our publications where it just sort of goes into the details about how there is intended to be an ongoing process for applying for proposing new top-level domains. So the AGB, it was really the roadmap for anyone that was interested in the applicant guidebook, the new GTLD program. So that could be for potential applicants, for parties that might want to monitor the process and potentially use the objection procedures for the GAC for, and really for anyone to really understand how the procedures of the program are intended to be implemented. So there were, I believe, 9 versions of the applicant guidebook. So you could say it was an iterative process. It was published for public comment. They were discussed at ICANN meetings, and it was developed over the course of, I want to say, approximately 4 years or so. And so it also served as the guide or the roadmap as well for staff in operationalizing the implementation. So moving over to questions and concerns related to the subject, and again, these are pulled from the final issue report. Some concerns were mostly focused on the fact that it is a single document and it is intended to serve all the parties that are interested in the program. So in that regard, some members of the discussion group had suggested dividing the applicant guidebook into distinct sections or audience-driven sections so that it's partitioned in such a way that it's made more useful for whoever the audience might be. And sort of also related to that is that some had suggested that the AGB could be more of a procedural guide where it's more step-by-step, and then perhaps the history and background and rationale for and things like that could be somehow separated, so it's a little more divided in the purpose for what you're looking at. And then others had also suggested that the applicant guidebook itself was not the proper vehicle for the policy implementation. Although in the discussions with the discussion group, at least my recollection was that there was not necessarily an alternative proposed. And so finally, the discussion group did not necessarily anticipate policy development work regarding the AGB. But the thought is that if there is broad support for some alternative vehicle for the policy, then that could potentially warrant policy development. But what is maybe more likely is that if the working group wants to provide guidance on the organization of the applicant guidebook or content changes, and so not necessarily the wordsmithing of the text, but structure of the applicant guidebook, then that might warrant implementation guidance, as well as participation in an implementation review team down the line. So it was a pretty brief section in the issue report, so I think that's actually it. And so I'm turning it back over to, I believe, Krista. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the introduction and getting into the topic. So, as Steve has already pointed out, there are just a few kind of items for us to, I guess, really consider, which is perhaps changing the structure of the AGB, perhaps partitioning it into different distinct audience-driven sections, how to improve readability and understanding of the rules, whether it should be more process-driven, i.e. providing more step-by-step instructions, or is there a different vehicle altogether? And if so, what would be the alternative? So getting into some of the questions, do we agree that the AGB is the right methodology? And if not, does anyone have any suggestions? And I'll open the floor for any comments there for a minute to see if anyone either agrees or disagrees with it being the right methodology. Jeff, I see your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. I think the applicant guidebook is as good as any other. I don't think we need to completely revamp the guidebook. I would just, how the guidebook though is written in kind of legalese type language, and there's a lot of rationale and background in a number of the sections. I think it may be easier to potentially do more of what I call the idiot's guide to applying for a TLD, as opposed to something that has all of these explanations as to why things are the way they are. So maybe a stripped-down version of the guidebook to really tell the applicant what it needs to know. And then if you wanted to publish all of the rationale and everything else, it could be a supplement or something to that. But if you were to print out the applicant guidebook, which many of us did, it's several hundred pages long, and that got a little unwieldy. So that would just be my recommendation.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. I see Ashley Roberts commented, I'm happy with the AGB as the correct methodology. There may be a case for small changes based on individual implementation changes, but in general, the AGB does the job. Okay, so we might have a couple of minor tweaks on that. Have to figure out how to add that to the CC2 questions. So going on to the next question is, how can it be improved? Should there be a different structure to the AGB regarding the type of application? Would anyone like to comment that or agree or disagree that it should have a different roadmap depending on the type of application? Jeff, please.
Thanks, Jeff Newman. The only thing I would say here is not necessarily by type of application, but if we were to have, let's say, if there were to be an RFP program or something like that, potentially breaking out the responsibilities of a technical provider as opposed to having everything in the same guidebook. But I think to be doing it by different application type would, not sure the application types are so different whereby most things won't apply to everyone anyway. So at this point, I would not recommend by application type, but possibly a separate one for technical providers and registry operators if we do have an RSP program.
Great. Anyone else like to add to that? Okay. So finally, the last kind of question that we have is a tip on the application guidebook is, should it perhaps be more step-based depending on the type of application? And I think we kind of just already addressed that, but just to quickly finish up, or if anyone has any other thoughts. Perfect. Okay, then I guess we'll update the CC2 based on the feedback from today, and we'll keep going on the next subject. So, Sarah, I'll turn it over to you to do systems and let you go from there.
Great. Thank you, Krista. So when we had our discussion previously about systems and communications, this is Sarah Bakke, by the way, for the record, staff had mentioned that there had been some recommendations from the new GCLT. Implementation review recommendations. And I provided the link there and the information specifically that staff wanted us to consider was on page 174 for systems, the system development process. Many have benefited from leveraging industry standards, best practices for product development. In this round, there was limited time available between the finalization of system requirements and the launch of the TLD application systems. In the future application rounds, the program timeline should provide additional time for system development, including the definition of robust system requirements and appropriate testing. In summary, for 8.1a, in developing timelines for future application rounds, provide an appropriate amount of time to allow the use of best practices in system development. And 8.1b, explore beta testing programs for systems to allow for lessons learned, to increase effectiveness of such systems, and to provide further transparency, clarity, and opportunity for preparation of applicants. And so in reviewing this, or after reading this, I went back and reviewed where we had landed from our previous discussion. Next slide. And so as you can see here, our goal is to provide implementation guidance such as a minimum set of security infrastructure standards for consideration by ICANN. And our findings that we've had to date indicated a need for improvements to security and stability, incorporating more robust user testing, improved integration of systems, allowing adequate time for system development, the ability to use non-ASCII, and having a system that would allow for the automated sending of invoices for those who request the invoices. And so based off of our discussions, it seems that we are tracking relatively close to the recommendations that came out of this review, but we wanted to just sort of go over it once again to see if anyone had any additional items that they may like to add for systems based off this information. I don't know if anyone had a chance to look at the full context. And I see a note from Jeff in the chat saying part of the problem was that ICANN believed it had to develop customized systems at the beginning as opposed to looking at what was out there. Rather than customizations, ICANN should look now at what is out there and not wait until the next round starts. Does anyone else have anything additional that they might like to add? Ashley, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. So yeah, this is Ashley Roberts. So I'm not sure how granular we wanted to get with any implementation guidance, but I've got a point about the kind of use of the various ICANN portals for corresponding with ICANN. So that's primarily the GDD portal and also the CFC portal that was used during the applications. ICANN kind of pushes applicants and registries to correspond with them through the portals rather than by email. And I think it kind of makes perfect sense from kind of managing workflow and tracking and that kind of thing. But there's a kind of potential issue there in that the applicants and the registries don't have, they don't kind of own that correspondence, you know, by having access to the emails. All of that correspondence is just held in the ICANN portals. So there's a couple of issues there. I mean, we've all seen the kind of problems with security of ICANN's portals and the robustness of them. But there's potential issues with potential loss of correspondence data. And the second problem would be a kind of potential conflict with ICANN being the kind of sole owner of that information through ownership of the portal. For example, if there are any kind of disputes or legal action that an applicant or a registry wants to take up with ICANN, there could be a conflict there by way of ICANN being the owner of that data. I'm not sure what other kind of registries or applicants think about that, but I just wanted to flag that. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Ashley. That's very good input. So it looks like we have some discussions going on in the chat. See if I can scroll back up. Following up on Jeff's previous comment, he had said, I didn't agree, but that was the review. Trang has noted, is the requirement for the system to be able to generate invoices or to just send? Invoices might need to be generated in a different system than in the application system. And Vanda said, yes, many studies have been done from underserved regions that can be used. And John Nevitt has noted, I'm sure that we discussed this before, but systems need to be secure. The data breach or highly confidential information with access was very problematic for many applicants. And then Krista has replied to Trang saying, idea is to be able to generate and send an invoice if they need it for their own internal purposes for payment systems. So some good conversations here. Does anyone else have anything additional to add regarding systems before we move on to communications? The train is writing. Just give a minute. Okay. Well, while we're waiting, I'll go to the next slide so people can see it. Anyway, so as you can see on this slide, I'll get back to the chat here in a minute. Trang, I see you have your hand up now. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I just thought it would be faster for me to speak rather than type. So, Krista, thank you. I understand the requirement then to mean that invoices are made available to applicants that request it, and not necessarily in terms of how I can generate them, meaning, you know, whether or not it be generated in ICANN's finance system or some other system, just so long that they are made available to applicants that require them. Is that correct?
Hi, it's Krista. Yeah, I think that's the idea. The issue is I think there is some kind of system in there where it would allow them to choose whether or not they want that or not. So hence the idea of having a system behind it. But if there's some other methodology then that gets them the invoice, then I'm sure it's going to result in the same thing.
Yep, understood. Thank you.
Thanks. Sorry, Sarah, go ahead.
No problem at all. This is Sarah Bakke again for the record. We have one more note from Ashley in the chat saying a possible solution is issue I raised could be to have the systems automatically email a copy of the added correspondence to applicants so that they have an email copy as well as in the portal. That's definitely a good idea, I think. And Alan Greenberg has noted, issue is not, I presume, whether invoice is delivered through the portal, but that it can be requested. And I think that's right. I think the issue was that some folks, for internal purposes, needed to have invoices, and there was difficulty in getting just an invoice in general, regardless of the method in which it was provided. Trang, I see your hand is still up. Is that an old hand, or do you have anything additional to say? Oh, great. Okay, so let's go ahead in the interest of time and move on to communications. I still see folks typing in the chat, but we'll get to that in a minute. So once again, from the new GTLD program implementation review recommendations, a section on communications on page 198 stated, although the success of the program communications during this application round is difficult to assess because success is not defined within the communications plan, there are lessons learned that should be taken into consideration for future rounds. In the 2012 application round, the new GTLD microsite was developed to house all the new GTLD program information. To increase accessibility and usability for future rounds, program information should be consolidated into a single site with any other ICANN information. Other consideration for future rounds is that ICANN's global stakeholder engagement team is much larger than it was before the 2012 round, and this team should be leveraged to help promote awareness of the new GTLD program of their respective regions' constituencies. In summary, 8.4a, consolidate all next round program information into a single site and make information as accessible as possible, and 8.4b, leverage ICANN's global stakeholder engagement team to promote awareness of the new GTLD program within their region's constituencies. So once again, went back and reviewed what we had discussed previously and sort of where we were landing on those topics. And you can see on this slide, discussions to date have indicated a need for a knowledge base that is more timely and searchable, allowing for better communicate applicant advisories, create some sort of subscription service, consolidate program information into a single site, enable ICANN's global stakeholder engagement team to be leveraged to promote global awareness, and using metrics to understand the level of success of communications were not established. In particular, lack of awareness around applicant support program was highlighted as an area of weakness. And so, once again, it seems like we're tracking pretty close to what the recommendations were, but wanted to just sort of bring this to your attention, see if it brings any other ideas to mind or any other comments you think should be considered. Jeff, please go ahead. I see your hands up.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry, took me a minute to get off mute. I went back and reread this section of the implementation report, and I found it odd that there were no recommendations on things. There was a lot of discussion on the communication plan, which is good, but I didn't see recommendations on things like timing of when a communication period should start, a budget of a communications period. There were no recommendations made on what languages communications needed to be in on. But I thought that was kind of missing from the implementation report. The other thing that I really think, the section gets into customer service, and I think we should probably spend some time on that. It was interesting because during just before the application period, there was a telephone line customer support. And then I guess once the application period opened up, that telephone line communication stopped. So there was no way to have real-time communication with anyone. And it made having any communications very difficult, time-consuming, because it all had to be done on email. And since ICANN was getting a number of customer service reps up to speed, we found that we had to go back and forth with a number of emails, which could take a number of days just to get a simple question answered. I would love to see a recommendation to explore some real-time customer support. If we can't do it through a phone line because there's no way to track and there's a fear of providing favorable information to one and not others. Perhaps there could be a chat function that could be implemented, which is pretty easy to do. So people can explain context behind their requests. And the other communications issue, which is sort of related to the systems, is that when ICANN wants to communicate, and they still do it this day, they don't actually send you the communication. What they do is they say there's an update in the there's a message for you in the portal. And of course, you have to go to a computer, you have to log in, you have to figure out what the message is, and it's kind of a hassle. So some way that I think Ashley was starting with saying, you know, about email communications and being able to own it, I think that's one issue. But email communications in some way that you don't actually have to go and log into a portal to see a comment that's made on a case number, which is as simple as, we've received your document. So those are just some suggestions and communication things I think could be improved. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. Those were some very good points. I think staff has got made notes about those. John, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Sarah. John Nevitt. I'm not sure if this is the right place for these communications, but if Jeff's bringing up customer support, you know, there was kind of a backlash against applicants in a way, especially after the applicants were in, but the process was still going on, and we were still dealing with RPMs and some other things, and there was a strict prohibition from ICANN staff to talk to applicants, but they were free to talk to other people in a policy debate. And it seemed like it was an unfair situation for applicants at the time that we weren't able to have conversations and discuss ongoing issues simply because we were applicants. Sure, there should be topics that are off limits. That makes sense, but to kind of discriminate against applicant conversations, I think the pendulum swung a little too far in that. I'm not sure if there's anything we could do in this process to talk about that, but that certainly was an issue that applicants had during that process. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, John. Does anyone else have anything to add to that? I see multiple people are typing in the chat. I will give them a minute. Karen Day said plus one to John. Also, Jeff has noted customer support was in the communication section of the implementation review document from ICANN, so I assume it belonged there. And Phil Buckingham has said, should not invoicing be done through ICANN's accounting system, which should be totally separate from the application system. The overriding requirement must be to absolutely eliminate any attempts of breach of the application portal this time. And Train has noted, for background and context, phone support was provided during the application window for technical issues related to accessing TAS to ensure equal access to information. I can develop knowledge articles when a question is received and then point to it to respond, and then point to it, yeah, to respond. And one more comment from Jeff. Fear of communicating with applicants led to ICANN not being clear with applicants. This led to, I believe, an increase in having to issue clarifying questions. And Jeff noted to Train that it's impossible to really search the knowledge base and to get the answers. Great input from everyone. Thank you. Does anyone have any additional comments that they would like to add to that which has already been stated, or anything new to add before we move on? I see that we have about 20 minutes left. We do want to make sure we have time for discussing the CC2 follow-up items. Jeff has noted on the TAS system, I'm not sure why the submission of applications had to be only in ASCII, no links, no diagrams, etc. There were lots of complaints about that. And Trang has noted, yes, the search capability of the knowledge base has room for improvement. Okay, I think in the interest of time, just to make sure we don't cut ourselves short, we could probably wrap up on this conversation. I see one more comment from Ashley, tagging onto Jeff's point, any applicant information should be easy to locate and preferably stored in one place. In the first round, information was stored in various locations, the AGB, the knowledge base, FAQs, etc., making it hard to find what you were looking for. Yes. Excellent point, Ashley. So moving on, I still see folks typing. I don't want to cut people short. If you want to put your hands up and say what you're wanting to express, that might be quicker. Nope. Oh, okay. So I believe the first question that we were going to address topic was going to be on the application fees. And Krista, did you want to discuss this slide?
Hi, it's Krista for the record. Yeah. So in reviewing the correspondence from our last meeting and tying it into the CC2 questions, there were a couple items that I wanted to bring up for discussion and just to make sure that they're properly represented and or receive additional feedback so that we can update the questions. So the first one is cost recovery. We had a lot of terminology on using the word cost recovery, which technically isn't correct being an accountant. So the real word should really be break even, and just as I know there was some discussion in the last call regarding what cost recovery was. And really, break even is just where total revenues and total expenses are equal. So there should be no gap between the two in the perfect world. Obviously, we're not in the perfect world, but theoretically, that's the way it should work. And then the CC2 questions, and number two, discussion on the slide. The cost recovery with a floor, cost floor and ceiling have been utilized in the questions, along with how I've added some of the questions on how a surplus or a shortage of funds should be utilized or recovered in the questions. And I think there was quite a bit of discussion in the last call on that gap. And as was kind of agreed to in the last call was whether to kind of keep it out of the weeds, I think was the term used, and keep it at the high level policy level or at the high level. So I haven't really updated the questions. I've tried to just incorporate that in there and asking for everyone's to spend 5 minutes and review that. So there's a couple of sections just to maybe focus on, which is section 1.4.3, and that's talking about the floor and the ceiling amounts. So the other item, which I'm not sure if it's still applicable or not, but I didn't want to, I'm looking for feedback on, is section 1.4.2, and we currently have the question, do you believe $185,000 was a reasonable fee? Is it still a reasonable fee? I'm not sure if this was an old question that hasn't been updated based on the recent discussions or not, and I'm looking for some feedback from everyone on whether they think that this question is no longer valid or is valid. Anyone, please? maybe I'm coming in from a different angle because I've kind of been in the weeds of it. Maybe I'll have to distribute that one via email or ask that everyone go and review that section to see if they still think it's valid. And if not, or if they believe it is, please email us. The other item that was brought up on the February 14th call was the use of excess funds and whether how they should be, allocated or offset with ongoing registry fees. And there was some discussion around if they should be used as a prepayment type of thing into annual costs going forward. And not trying to be too technical here, but technically that is a prepaid amount and not using the funds. So therefore, it would be moved into a prepaid account that I can, it would offset their revenues in the future. So I think this is what was intended, but again, if anyone has any clarification that they could add there, it would be appreciated. C-Train's typing. Okay, I'll just continue on. Might even be the other item that was discussed in the last call was using the funds to be used in underserved regions. So I've added some of the creating barriers to entry in underserved regions in section 1.4.3. And one thing I excluded was whether or not they should be used to fund applicant support. As I'm trying to keep this at the high level of creating policy and not answering the question, as was noted several times on Monday's call. And finally, in section 1.5, subsection 3, do we have something specific we want to address on the volume of applications? So there was a thought process in the last call that the volume of applications obviously impacts the cost recovery amounts. And we haven't, or so far the CCQ questions don't address anything on that. So is that something that we should add or consider? Or are we okay just kind of leaving it as is? Kind of behind in the chat, I see that Jeff, I think the use of excess funds needs further exploration. From a policy level, we should just state that the AG should set forth the use of excess funds, if any. There is a question there on that addresses that, on how they should be used or if there's any suggestions or recommendations on how they could be used. And I don't want to skip back to another subject to see trends going on. Back to customer service. And during
no comments or seeing no comments. Maybe if everyone could just take 5 minutes and review those few little sections and provide feedback via email, that would be greatly appreciated. And one more item to consider in the CC2 is section 1.1, subsection 11. And I added, if a registry service provider program is established, how should it be funded? For instance, should registries pay into the program, which reduce related ICANN evaluation fees and associated application fees? And I'm looking for feedback of whether that properly represents the call from, or the discussions from, the February 14th call. No comments. Okay. Well, we're a little bit ahead of time, but if everyone could please maybe just spend a little bit of time this week reviewing the CCP questions, specifically those areas that I brought up that I want to make sure are properly represented of the working group, that would be greatly appreciated. And believe it or not, we are done a little bit early, and I'd like to thank everyone for their hard work and dedication for getting us this far and to getting us to Copenhagen and through all of the different topics. Sarah, would you like to add a big thanks?
Yes, thank you all for joining us today and for your input. It's greatly appreciated. And I'm curious if most of you will be going to Copenhagen. Perhaps we could get a sense of who all might be there. Could you possibly a little green check if you're planning on being in Copenhagen next week? Or 2 weeks, I guess. Okay, great. Like a good amount of you. Hopefully we can continue to have some good conversations and make some progress on this face-to-face. Thank you, everyone. I think that is it. Do you have anything else, Krista?
Nope, I think we're good.
Okay. Then we can end the recording. Thank you all. And have